Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca Mesut Özil. Corner, llegó el gol de Olivier Giroud. Marca el Arsenal, marca Olivier Giroud. Gol de los Gunners.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to another Arscast Extra. As always, with James from Gunnerblog. Goodly morning to you, James.
Goodly morning. How are you doing?
I am all right. This is a bit of a landmark Arscast Extra. It's episode number 150. Can you believe that?
Wow. That's scary, isn't it?
It is.
150 hours, days of our lives devoted to this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for what? For what? I mean, what's...
To what end? I don't know. That's a scary question. I don't think we should ask it.
No, I think we should just take a moment as well just to say thanks again to everybody who came out on Thursday night, as well as our guests, Amy, Philippe and Stuart, to everybody who came along to the show at the Garage in Highbury in Islington. Thanks a million. Obviously, buying a ticket helps us keep things going. It keeps the lights on and the support is really greatly appreciated.
Yeah, and it was very, very cool to meet so many people. Couldn't believe it, how many people were there. It was a really fun night. And yeah, and also thanks to Amy and Philippe too, and Stuart for coming along and being such great guests.
And if you weren't there this time, you'll have to come to the next one because, you know, you're missing out because they're cool. They're good, fun nights.
And they are really fun. It's always fun to have a chat. I mean, the show themselves are fun, but chatting to people before and after is a really nice part of it too.
It certainly is.
We were there incognito, you know. Oh, yeah.
Incognito. Nobody knew who we were. That's the thing.
Nah. Yeah. It's almost like we weren't that important.
Yeah, true, true. So, look, it's been quite a fun weekend from a footballing point of view. Obviously, Arsenal are back on track with a 3-1 win over Bournemouth. Not many of the other results went our way, although... If we have to start somewhere that's not necessarily Arsenal, there are a couple of things that I think we can enjoy. One is the fact that Tottenham have been beaten.
Yes.
Not necessarily the best because, you know, obviously it meant that Chelsea won, but, you know, Tottenham getting beaten is always, it's always a fun thing.
Yeah, and I think every season, you know, the moment where every other Premier League side has suffered a loss is one that should be commemorated, of course, in the Invincibles' honour. And even after this point, any other Spurs losses will continue to be fun, right?
Yes, absolutely. There's always fun to be had in a Spurs defeat. And then, of course, Manchester United dropped further points at home and Jose Mourinho was sent off yet again, for kicking a water bottle. I mean, we know that that's a crime at Old Trafford. We've experienced that before. Arsene Wenger was sent to the stands unceremoniously by... Was it Mike Dean? I can't remember who it was.
It feels like it would be Mike Dean. We don't necessarily know or have any evidence, but that seems like something he would do, right?
Yeah. I'm going to have to look this up, but I think it was Mike Dean.
He was confined to a pen, you know, with all the Manchester United fans. Mm. That was sort of kind of an iconic image. Wenger stood there kind of Christ-like, you know, among the supporters, baying crowd. Have you discovered who this vindictive referee was?
The Arsenal manager was sent to the stands by Mike Dean on the advice of fourth official Lee Probert for kicking a water bottle.
What a combination. Dean and Probert working in tandem.
Absolutely. They sound like the world's worst ice skating duo, don't they? Probert and Dean.
Lovely. I'd love to see that.
I wouldn't. those ice skating costumes are far too tight. We do not need to see Mike Dean's camel toe.
Like a Blades of Glory type thing. I would enjoy that. Well, look, so yes, Jose Mourinho was sent off. I think he's got as many sendings off as home wins or something like that. So
brilliant. Long may that last.
I know. I am enjoying it, actually. Ander Herrera came out of the game and said, "We don't know what we have to do to win a game." And joyfully, neither did Jose Mourinho. So,
it's
fun so far.
So far, so good. And look,
His record's worse than David Moyes, actually, I think, after
really?
This many games. Yeah.
Yeah. It is thoroughly enjoyable. There's no other way of putting it. There's part of me that goes, it won't last. He'll turn it around. He'll make Manchester United better than they are right now. And I don't think that's an impossibility, which is why I think it's incumbent on us right now to take it for what it is and to enjoy it for what it is. A man struggling, being absolutely miserable in the full glare of the spotlight, of the media, of the opposition fans. A guy who's behaved like an absolute cunt for most of his career. And it feels like chickens are coming home to roost. Maybe he'll send those chickens away or deep fry those chickens. I don't know. But while the chickens are coming home to roost, I'm going to enjoy it. And I suggest everybody else does too.
Welcome those chickens with outstretched arms.
Come to us, chickens.
Bosom. Yeah. carpe diem. Carpe chicken. Chicken diem.
Chicken
enjoy
diem.
It, basically.
I wonder what's the Latin word for chicken, do you think?
I don't know.
Polo, pollo, something, I don't know. I'm gonna look it up here.
Pollo diem, seize the chickens.
Seize the chicken.
That's what we're telling you.
Yes.
Knee slide down, the sideline of Mourinho's hubris.
Pull'em, apparently. Pull'em.
Pull'em.
Mm. Yes.
There you go, pull'em. Yeah.
Pull'em DM, whatever, I don't know. We're not Latin scholars, but I know we have a Latin scholar who listens to this show because he emailed us before. So he might be able to give us some chicken-related Latin to use that we can enjoy while Jose Mourinho's having a difficult time. But did you, James, having not necessarily enjoyed the last number of Arsenal games, in particular the one against PSG last week, did you enjoy this one?
Yeah, I really did, actually. It was a very entertaining game. Some of the credit for that has to go to Bournemouth, who, I haven't seen loads of Bournemouth actually this season, but it was one of those where I kind of saw what all the fuss was about. Mm. They do play some good football actually, and there were periods of the game, particularly the first half, where they were very dominant. And in a way, we have a lot of sides come to the Emirates and be very defensive and very negative and very niggly.
Mm.
And I actually thought that they didn't do that, and yet still were, for long periods, probably the better team.
Yeah, they played well. I saw them the other week against Sunderland, and the only reason they didn't win that game was because they just kept missing chance after chance, and the keeper made some great saves. But they do play some nice football, and I think the reaction after we went ahead, it was a terrible, terrible error from... was it Cook, I think?
Cook. It was Cook. Mm. It turns out one cook was too many cooks. it was a really bad pass. I mean, we're seeing more and more of that in the Premier League because obviously it's so incumbent on so many teams now to play out from the back. Inherent is that, there will be errors. And this was one of the worst, really.
It was a really bad one, yeah. Alexis was alert to get onto the ball and roll it home. But, it didn't necessarily dent Bournemouth's confidence or their philosophy or certainly how they were going to play the game. They got on top a bit after that, I thought, maybe until about the half hour mark. We'll come to their goal in a moment, but we were forced into a very early change. Mathieu Debuchy back, playing his first Arsenal game for over a year, went down with what looked like, I think, a hamstring injury. Is that what the word is? I don't know.
Yes, it was. Apparently he did this injury producing a back heel, which apparently is the most dangerous thing you can do for your hamstring, in the words of Arsene Wenger.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, do you remember it? Actually, he was on the right wing, quite far advanced, and I remember thinking, oh, that was quite a handy bit of skill. It was a back heel to Theo Walcott, I think it was.
Right.
And in that moment is actually when he injured himself.
Oh, dear. The guy...
Know your limits, Mathieu.
Yeah. He really doesn't have very much luck at all, does he? Since he's joined Arsenal, he's just been beset by injury. Obviously, there was the bad ankle injury he suffered against Manchester City fairly early in his career. Then, having come back, he was the victim of a very nasty snide foul by Arnautovic, who pushed him while he was off his feet, and he ended up dislocating his shoulder, loses his place to Hector Bellerin. Now, last season, I thought that perhaps he could have shown a little more fight, but wanted to be part of the European Championships. didn't work out for him because of injury sustained at Bordeaux when he was on loan there. Came back this season, had a big calf injury. He's only just come back, and now he's done a hamstring, which Arsene Wenger says is severe. So something's going on there with Mathieu Debuchy. He's broken a mirror or run over Satan's cat. I don't quite know what it is, but he's really having a difficult time.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to think yesterday of a player who's been quite so unfortunate with injury. I mean, Tomasz Rosicki springs to mind, but every time he's got an opportunity, he seems to be beset by these fitness problems. I mean, the only thing I did wonder is, was he rushed back a little bit soon? I mean, he had that one game, was it for the under-23s against Spurs, but other than that, barely kicked a ball this season. Yeah. I was quite surprised to see him in the starting lineup. Were you shocked to see him there, or was it you were expecting it?
Not necessarily shocked, to be honest. You know, I thought the way Carl Jenkinson had played, it was definitely going to be something that Arsene Wenger was considering. And I do wonder, like, yeah, he's only had the one under 23 game, but look, I mean, he could have done that hamstring playing in another under 23 game. You know, is there such a huge difference? Or in training, you know, so maybe he wasn't fully match fit, but you'd have to think that, you know, they did all the tests and he was given the all clear, you know, to play in a game, you know, at home against opposition like Bournemouth. You know, I don't think it was a crazy decision or anything to play him, but obviously, when a hamstring goes, then you know, it looks like it's a bad decision. But you know, what did you think of the decision to bring on Gabriel to replace him?
I must admit, I found that strange. I mean, you know, Gabriel. It was interesting. Arsene Wenger talked about it after the game. He said he'd watched some videos of Gabriel playing at left back relatively competently for Villarreal. He said he found one video of Gabriel playing right back in Brazil, and it was not the most convincing, in his own words. But he picked him because of he's a natural defender and because of his pace, was his explanation. Looking at it from where I was sat, I was thinking, well, you know, we've got Rob Holding, who I know is primarily centre-half but has played right-back plenty for Bolton last season. And also got Francis Coquelin there, who, while a midfielder by trade, has played both full-back positions for Arsenal in his time there and relatively decently in a kind of Mathieu Flamini-esque manner. So I was surprised by it, and at first I thought, oh, God, we're in for trouble here. You could also switch Mustafi and Gabriel, I guess, but Gabriel kind of... he kind of improved as the game went on. I mean, I'm hoping it's not going to be something we rely on long term, but I think he deserves a measure of credit, really, for adapting to an unfamiliar position, you know, across the course of the game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I was a bit concerned when he came on, but I thought he played pretty well overall. Certainly as the game went on, he got into the position and adjusted, I guess, positionally, and was able to read the game a bit better than he was in the initial, let's say, 10, 15 minutes after he came on, where it looked, this could be a bit of a bad decision. So, yeah, credit to him for doing that. And, you know, he's a guy who hasn't played very much at all this season. So, you know, he's coming into it fairly unmatch fit as well, I guess you would say. So yeah, kudos to him for that. He was pretty solid. So look, 1-0 up, and Bournemouth are playing quite well. We're not necessarily playing as well as we might. And then their goal. What did you make of the decision to award the penalty?
I thought it was soft, to be honest. I thought it was soft. I know, sort of, I felt like Nacho Monreal got away with one at Old Trafford, you know, a few weeks ago. But I felt like the karmic retribution. Let's say, you know, the Poulet came home to DM or whatever it is for Nacho.
Pull 'em.
Yeah, pull 'em. Because he, I thought he was a little bit hard done by there. I sort of feel like it's one of those where the striker initiates the contact. And I guess also slightly compounded by the fact that it looked like shortly before that, was it, Alexis had been brought down at the other end.
So, was Mesut Ozil, who was pulled over by the Bournemouth captain, Steve Francis, I think it was.
And that was in the build-up. Sorry, I was thinking we had like a penalty shout as well.
That wasn't a penalty. It was definitely a foul, but it took place
outside
the box. Yeah, the replay showed that took place outside the box. Now, he was absolutely furious. I thought that was 100% a foul. So yeah, that added to it. Then I thought there was a foul on Mesut Ozil in the build-up to the penalty. And when the ball rebounded into the box, to me, Wilson just launched himself into the side of Monreal. who was looking to sort of use his body to protect the ball, which I think he's perfectly entitled to do. And the referee gave the penalty. A bad decision, I think.
Yeah, well, I thought it was harsh, as I say. I mean, I know I'm jumping around in the chronology of the game, but did you think that Montreal might have conceded another penalty later in the game? What did you make of that incident, the handball in the second half?
Given what had happened earlier in the game, I was surprised that he didn't give a penalty for that. But, you know, it was very much ball to hand, wasn't it? You know?
It's a curious rule, that, isn't it? I mean, like, it's everyone knows it, but I feel like that's one that... I feel like decisions are not made on that basis. Do you know what I mean? I feel like it's the interpretation of that rule is far looser than that. So it's a difficult one to assess. But I guess on balance, I guess that was, you know, 0.7 of a penalty, and this first instance was 0.3. So I can kind of make my peace with it. But at the time... pretty frustrating.
Yeah. Is this where we invent a new statistic, like expected penalties, XP?
Penalties. Yeah, I think so, probably.
Yeah.
But they put it away. Who was it who took it? I forget now.
Callum Wilson took the penalty.
Callum Wilson.
And then within a minute, they had a brilliant chance to go ahead. If you remember, there was a free kick, I think, from Koscielny gave away a free kick. Again, much to the ire of everyone watching, I think that was probably more of a free kick than the penalty was a penalty. And from that free kick, I don't know which Smith it was. There's a Brad Smith and Smithy the Smith Smith. I can't remember what his other name is. I think it was Smithy Smith who had a header from, I don't know, probably 10 yards out with just the goalkeeper to beat and put it over the bar. And, you know, that's been something that's been part of our game this season. We concede, we have a little bit of a wobble, or we have allowed those chances, too many of those chances, in my opinion. But got away with it. He headed over the bar, thank you very much indeed. And then I think as the rest of the first half progressed, we grew back into the game and certainly were on top by half time.
Yeah, well, I guess the one thing we don't concede in the Premier League is headers. So thanks to whoever sold their soul or whatever it took, you know, to get that to happen.
Yeah.
The run continues. But yeah, I mean, Bournemouth had that good little spell. But then I thought, you're right, we sort of managed to slowly turn the tide, you know, after that. And, and actually, the second half, we got a relatively early goal, did we not? I forget the exact minute, but it felt like it was relatively early.
It was, I think, the 53rd minute.
Yeah.
I'll check right now.
Which is ideal, really.
Yes, it was the 53rd minute. And a very nice goal it was too, wasn't it? With the work from Ozil in the box, the cross from Nacho Monreal. Did you see Theo Walcott's interview afterwards?
He was
talking on Sky, and he goes, I think Nacho's gone for the shot there, to be fair, but, you know, it just came to me at the back post, and there I was to nod it home. If he'd gone for the shot, it would have either gone in the goal or out of the stadium. It was that kind of a chance where if you hit it, you know, it's either going to crack into the back of the net or you're going to mishit it wildly and send it, you know, somewhere into the stand. So I think he's done Monreal a huge injustice there, because it was an absolutely beautifully controlled cross considering the ball that came into him from Mesut Ozil.
Yeah, and the way the ball was dropping, you know, wasn't that dissimilar to the goal he scored for Spain a couple of weeks ago. And I thought, is he gonna try and pull it off? But it was very unselfish, very aware, very controlled, and a second career headed goal, I think, for Theo Walcott. So he'll take that. But I couldn't really believe Walcott's injury. It was almost as if he couldn't really understand what Monreal had done. You know, sort of was like. Too generous and considered, but there you go.
Yeah.
But and then the celebration, of course, from Theo, the Bebeto baby swing. I mean, you know, someone's got to come up with a new baby celebration.
Don't you think? I don't know. I mean, look, I understand people want to celebrate the fact they've had a baby, but you know, pretty much anyone can have a baby. You know what I mean? There's nothing that special about it. Yeah, lots of people have had them. You know,
that's one of the problems with the world. It's overpopulated.
Yeah, exactly.
Should we be celebrating? That's the question.
Yeah, next time a player has a baby, he should just, you know, do that thing where he holds his hands up and goes, sorry, Sorry, I'm contributing to the end of the world here. Overpopulation.
Like he scored against his former team.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. but yeah, look, well, congratulations to him. I thought some of the stuff that he said was brilliant. You know, he said it's been a long process, so hopefully now I can just look forward to the family. I can't remember what it was, but he made it sound like a great big saga. It was quite funny.
Signing a new deal, or, you know, a transfer. It's been a long process, but I'm happy to be where we are now. Just really focused on the future and what we can achieve.
So what was I going to say then?
So So there we go. So that was what that was. What was that? 2-1.
Yeah, that was 2-1. Well, sorry about this. That was 2-1, and then I thought it was pretty. I thought it was pretty pretty even for the rest of the game. They were still well in it. Petr Cech had to make a great save from Benik Afobe. With his legs to keep it at 2-1. That was a headline waiting to be written, wasn't it? You know, former Gunner comes back to haunt us.
We were so busy thinking about Jack Wilshere, we forgot about Benik Afobe.
Yeah, I did enjoy that moment where Danny Welbeck just spent some moments laughing at Jack Wilshere after the first goal. Obviously, Wilshere's trying very hard not to react because he is, for all intents and purposes, a Bournemouth player this season. But that was good. Good bants there from Welbs.
Nice to see. Nice to see that he's alive and Welbs anyway as well.
Alive and Welbs. And then we brought on Giroud and Ramsey, who I thought added a little something to our attacking play. You know, they combine well, those two. And obviously Giroud was then involved in the goal that sealed the deal. Mesut Ozil picked it up on the right of the box. I thought originally Giroud had taken the wrong option. He could have played in Alexis a little bit earlier. But he showed, to be fair to him, absolutely blinding pace to get to Mesut Ozil's pass. It was like watching, it's like watching a, you know, one of those big giant horses that pulls barrels of Budweiser around in the Christmas ad. It was like that.
Yes.
One of those horses.
Like we're seeing one of those, you know, in the Grand National.
But he got to the ball, pulled it back, and there was Alexis to make it 3-1, and they had a lovely big hug at the end. It was very nice.
Oh, to be, you know, the filling in that sandwich. It looked like a lovely cuddle. Giroud, he did actually do well to get to that and tuck it back, because apparently he was playing with some sort of injury. He felt a bit of a muscular tension when he first came on. So credit to him. And Alexis, I mean, a Piresian arrival at the back post, wasn't it? Nice little neat side foot.
Yeah.
I saw Robert Pires yesterday.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
I saw Robert Pires and Jens Lehmann. Lots of intimidating, tall, invincible men wandering around.
Did you sort of just bathe in their musk?
Yeah, that's it. I acted cool. I pretended I was fine with it. But inside, you know, my heart skipped a beat. So that was that was 3-1. I mean, you know, we had the penalty incident at the other end with the Nacho Monreal handball, the good save from Cech. I'm trying to think if they had any other really sort of clear-cut opportunities.
No, I don't think they did. I mean, it was a fairly even game, but most of it was played in midfield. I don't think either goalkeeper had a lot to do overall. You know, Cech had that one save from Afobe, and I don't really remember Federici having to make any saves. You know, both teams were pretty good defensively. It was all trying to break down, you know, from midfield. It didn't really work for either side in terms of creating clear-cut chances anyway. But I just thought on the balance of it, we deserved the win. We deserved the 3 points. I thought we did play pretty well. I thought there were encouraging signs. Obviously, Alexis up front again. And, you know... It's difficult to look past that as the thing that's really working for us this season.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And it's funny, isn't it? Because Giroud did come on and have a good impact and helped change the game to an extent. But that seems to be where he really excels, is when he comes on as this kind of plan B. I thought Alexis was really good, actually, on the day. And even in the first half, in that spell where Bournemouth kind of... were, you know, on top or marshalling the midfield pretty well. He was the guy who was going to produce something. There was that shot from the right-hand side of the penalty box that cannoned off the crossbar. Mm. There was that little 1-2 he played with Ozil that would have been a brilliant goal.
Oh,
Where he just clipped it into him and then he smashed it over. going for a bit too much power. But he always looked like the guy who was going to make the difference. And there was a brilliant pass in the second half for Ozil. Did you see that with the outside?
Oh, yeah. That was really, really special. Yeah. He had a great game, actually.
He had a really good game. And I think, although some of that did come on the flank in the second half, I agree with you. When I see our starting lineup and I see that he's up top, I generally think we'll get a more fluid performance, and as a whole, so it proved.
And he did, he felt obviously very good about things because he did an interview on Sky afterwards, which we're going to play a little bit of here. I'm just going to try and get it sorted here. So if you haven't heard...
His first, we believe.
Yeah, his first interview in English. So this is it, I think.
Alexis, I know you don't do many of these, but two goals, man of the match, a great day for you, a great day for the team.
Oh, thank you so much. So happy for two goals, but the team is mentally strong. So congratulations for one more baby, my friend. now, his mentality is the Premier League. It's very difficult. He continues the same. It's more difficult for me, for the team. He's the number one is Chelsea, City. This is the Premier League I like.
Your English is getting good. You're going to have to do more of these.
No. understand a little you, but it's and also so happy for my friend, for the team together. It's the fans is fantastic. It's so happy I go to my home with my dog.
Well done. You're the Premier League man of the match. Well done
to you as well. I love that. I'm going to go home with my dogs. Oh, I love that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, fair play to him, you know.
He does. He really loves those dogs. Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely.
And he loves those dogs.
He sure does. And, you know, that's the thing. Everyone should love their dogs. The world would be a better place if everyone loved their dogs as much as Alexis loved his. Granit Xhaka got the nod. I mean, Arsene Wenger made 7 changes yesterday, James.
Yeah,
which
it's
is
a lot of changes.
It's a huge amount of changes for a manager, you know, who does like to rotate things around a little bit, but generally doesn't quite go that deep in terms of how he shifts his squad around. So 7 changes was quite considerable. Granit Xhaka and Mohamed Elneny played together in the centre of midfield, and I thought Xhaka, again, like he did in the Tottenham game, he was really impressive without being, you know, anything ostentatious or showy about his performance. You know, I think he won 9 out of 11 tackles, made 14 ball recoveries, 3 interceptions. He's 90% pass completion. Just a really tidy game. And alongside him, Elneny, a guy with huge energy, and somebody else who's very, I'm not going to say conservative is the wrong word I want to use, but it doesn't waste the ball much when he has it. It's generally there and able to find an Arsenal man with it. So it seemed to click quite well in midfield.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, if midfield's about partnerships, this was one that I don't think we've seen before, but one that did work, actually, a good deal better than some others that we've watched in the last few weeks. I was surprised by seeing a complete change. I thought Coquelin would be in there or Ramsey. I thought Xhaka might start, but yeah, I thought he did really well. And it was sort of in the second half, he improved and there were some brilliant passes from him, actually. You know, once he sort of got his eye in and the game became a bit more stretched, that ability to pick people out from deep really came to the fore. And, you know, afterwards, Arsene Wenger said he's got an ability to play the ball between the lines and strikers love playing with someone like that. And actually, in recent weeks, that's exactly the quality he's been talking about the side missing with Xhaka Cazorla absent. So, you know, it does make you wonder why it's taken so long for him to get this opportunity. But I guess I kind of hope that this isn't just another false dawn for him, really. I feel like that was what the Spurs game was, in some extent. And now you want to see him retained in the side because he seems to be making good strides when he is called upon to play. And as for Elneny, his energy levels are just insane. I mean, in the last minute of the game, he was pressing like a madman.
That was, you know, amazing, wasn't it? He's running and, like, gesturing to people, you know, come up and give me a hand here as he pressed the goalkeeper. Like, huge lungs, huge.
And they're like, I we can't.
Yeah, we're fucking knackered, mate.
Yeah, I know. And he just has those huge reserves of energy. And that's not to say that's all he is. I mean, he's a very competent passer of the ball too, and always available, always able to give it to somebody else. But yeah, I mean, people talk about box to box players. I don't know, he'd go box to box to box to box, really. I mean, back and forth.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought that combination worked pretty well. the other changes we talked about, Debussy, but Oxlade-Chamberlain came in and...
I thought he was pretty good, actually.
I thought he had a decent enough day.
Yeah, worked hard and had some great moments, actually, bursting forward. A couple of them didn't come off, but, you know, he ran himself ragged. And I think one of the things that we were maybe critical of him about over the last number of seasons was the defensive side of his game. And it's not so much that he's not in the right positions, but he just seems to switch off. And there was one moment yesterday where a Bournemouth player got down the right-hand side, was trying to fizz in across, and Oxlade-Chamberlain chased back as fast as he could and blocked the ball out for a corner. And that is just those little things, I think, that perhaps speak to an improved focus from him. You know, in terms of what he has to do, not only going forward, but certainly defensively, you know, he seemed very aware.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I suppose, in broader context, I mean, this means we went through November unbeaten in the Premier League, continued the run, two draws and a win will be our final league record. I guess, what do you think of that, taking a step back from it and looking at it, you know, in broader context? What do you make of that little period?
Look, it could have been better, but it also could have been worse. You know, I think there's... When you draw a game against Spurs at home, I think that might have been the most disappointing one in terms of the results, because we'd gone ahead in that game and obviously conceded a penalty. And I'm a bit worried about how many penalties we're conceding this season. It's a bit annoying, but there you go. So when you look back at the results in the broader context, that's probably the most disappointing one. The Manchester United one, the performance was very disappointing, but obviously the result and the way it came about felt really quite nice. But yesterday it was hugely important for us to get a win under our belts. You know, there would have been serious questions asked if we couldn't have beaten Bournemouth at home yesterday. And perhaps what it shows as well is that we do have the ability to mix and match the squad a bit more than we used to. That making seven changes is drastic. You normally only make seven changes when you're resting players for a cup game or for a more important game coming up. But this was one that we had to win, and the changes pretty much worked. And we took the 3 points, and, you know, the league table is looking relatively healthy. Obviously, Chelsea and Liverpool won at the weekend, but, you know, we had to keep pace with them, and we did. So hopefully... Hopefully now, over the next couple of weeks, you know, we can start to get going again. So, you know, all in all, I think it was a pretty positive day. There were things were still to work on, but for the most part, a positive performance.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I suppose November's not out. Obviously, we've got the EFL Cup tie still to come.
Yeah.
Will we talk about that now, or will we leave it to the...
Yeah, we'll take a break now. Yeah, we'll do that. We'll take a little break right now, come back with your questions, including EFL Cup stuff, right after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arseblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arseblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/arseblog. Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two, where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter, at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog, and also on the ArsBlog Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TheArsBlog. Now, will I go first? Because we should probably touch on this EFL Cup game on Wednesday against Southampton, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So
far away.
Matthew Cooper, at Cooper M., wants to know, do you think Arsene Wenger will play a weaker side in the EFL Cup game and risk losing and upsetting the streak that we're on, the unbeaten run?
I think he'll definitely play a weakened side. You know, we've had a difficult run of fixtures this week. I know that obviously we've rotated the team significantly, but we've got West Ham away at the weekend. And I just think, look at the signs picked in the previous two rounds. I don't think his policy is going to change dramatically. I think there are certain players he'll think he owes a selection to. You know, you think of Emi Martinez, for example, who has just signed a new contract, probably partially on the basis that he gets to play in these games. So, yeah, I think it will be a weakened side. I guess what's interesting is to what extent will he look to involve the players who didn't play against Bournemouth, who'd class as first-team players. You know, you think of the likes of Aaron Ramsey, who started on the bench. Could they be in contention? Francis Coquelin didn't play a minute. He was on the bench. So it might be a slightly stronger side, but I still expect to see, you know, effectively a kind of second string. What about you?
Yeah, I think very much a second string, and that is the way that I would go with this tournament, to be honest. Who's left in the EFL Cup?
Some decent-ish teams, and Man U. Let me have a look. Leagues and Cups. EFL Cup.
Yeah, we're looking at the quarterfinals. Oh, this is the quarterfinals.
So we've got Arsenal, Southampton.
Right.
Right. Hull City and Newcastle.
Right.
Liverpool, Leeds, which is a sort of great 70s throwback time.
Mm-hmm, but Liverpool are going to win that.
Yes, they are. And then Manchester United, West Ham, who played, of course, at the weekend.
So you're looking at, if you go through to the semi-finals, a potential two-legged encounter in when? January or early February against maybe one of Liverpool or Manchester United?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
But if you win that, you can... You know, there's a prize.
Yeah, you do win a cup and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would just
I sense you're not really interested in it, though.
It's not that I'm not really interested. I just don't give a fuck. No, it's, you know, I just feel like maybe we have to prioritize somewhere along the way. So I would be inclined or very much in favor of playing the second string, the youth prospects and everything else all the way in this tournament. And if we get to final, we get to final, that's fine. But, you know, when you look at the schedule in February, let me just have a look here. Boom, ba-dum, ba-dum.
Well, I think you've got the Champions League knockout stages around that time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're going to have to play Barcelona at that point.
Of course.
And then you've got two-legged semi-finals against you know, either Liverpool or Manchester United.
It would be Manchester United, wouldn't it? Yeah.
It would almost certainly be Manchester United, just because. So, yeah, it would be... I think you'd have to prioritise it a little bit, yeah. So let me just have a look here. Yeah, January, EFL Cup. Oh, wow, look at this. So you play on Sunday the 1st of January against Crystal Palace. Tuesday the 3rd of January against Bournemouth, away from home. Saturday the 7th is round 3 of the FA Cup. Then in midweek on the 10th or the 11th, you've got the semi-final of the EFL Cup. And on the 14th, you've got Swansea City. So you're looking at 5 games in, 10 days. It's a game every 2 days if you get through. So you just can't play if you do that. You really can't play... any of the senior players, I don't think. You know, particularly if you're still in contention for the Premier League, if you're doing well enough in the league, it's got to be a tournament where you play the young players. And if they swim, fantastic. If they sink, you know, you've got to look at the bigger picture overall in the season, I think. What do you reckon?
Yeah, well, I think, I guess it depends what you mean by young players. I mean, I think you can probably get away with playing certain squad players who aren't that young. I'm thinking of guys like Kieran Gibbs, you know, who have got some experience and probably need the game time to stay sharp. So,
yeah,
I'm not sure how young a team it'll end up being. I mean, we can play the game, if you like, and figure out what we think's appropriate.
Okay, here's what I think he'll do. He'll play Martinez, Jenkinson, holding Gabriel Gibbs,
mm-hmm.
midfield. I suppose he could. He's going to have to involve somebody, isn't he? He's going to have to involve at least one of Coquelin, Elneny, Xhaka, and Ramsey, I think. Might be a good game to give Aaron Ramsey a run out in the middle, you know, get his match fitness up. I think he'll play the Jeff. I think he'll play Iwobi. I think Lucas Perez could be back. He did mention that at his press conference on Friday, that Lucas Perez could be back in contention for this particular game, so he could play.
Do you think he would play Olivier Giroud?
Depends on the hamstring, doesn't it? If he's, if there's any danger of Giroud tweaking that hamstring in this game, then don't play him. Don't play him. But if not, you know, he could give him a start. I do wonder if that would, like, not that it would annoy him or anything like that. But when you look at the way he's played this season, he's yet to start a Premier League game, and then he's starting in the EFL Cup, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, maybe.
I feel like you could kind of get it by him if you're also starting, you know, Ramsey and Coquelin, say, but if it's just like a bunch of kids and Giroud, that's a different thing.
You're like, oh, for fuck's sake, come on. So I think, you know, use as much of the young talent and as the fringe players as you possibly can. But, you know, for the guys that have been playing week in, week out, there's just no way we should involve them or risk any further injuries heading into what's, you know, a difficult period. People talk about November being difficult, but you look at those fixtures in January, it's like, it's pretty bonkers. Pretty bonkers, you know?
I think, you know, Koscielny, Mustafi, Walcott, Ozil, Alexis, I think these guys won't even be on the bench, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think they'll be part of the squad.
Yeah.
And that's probably the way it has to be.
Yeah.
And the fixtures we got coming up, like you say.
All right. I think it's your turn for a question.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what about this? This is from Hiragana Masaki. And they say, feel sorry for Debushi and Jenkinson, but what about the idea of playing either Gibbs or Monreal at right back and the other at left back? Both are experienced, pacey, difficult to get past, and familiar with our central defenders. What do you make of that?
With the greatest of respect to the person who sent in the question, no. Just no.
Okay.
You never, ever, ever see a left back playing right back. Hardly.
Yes, but what? But you do see right backs playing left back, right?
Occasionally, yes. I don't know why. There must be
There's
some
a weird
reason.
Prejudice, isn't there?
Yeah. No lefties
like
on the right.
Honestly, it's like as a left footer, I've decided to take up this crusade that Hiragana's mentioned in this question, because if you had a number of injuries at left back, I feel like, you know, we've seen Carl Jenkinson, for example, fill at left back. We've seen Bakary Sagna fill at left back.
Mm.
But I agree with you. Instinctively, you would never put Kieran Gibbs at right back.
Yeah.
It would seem all kinds of wrong.
Yeah. Just no.
But similarly, people always go, oh, you don't want two left-footed centre-backs. But loads of people have... We have two right-footed centre-backs now and nobody cares.
I don't know. There's just... Maybe it's just an inherent prejudice from years ago where left-footed and left-handed people were to be mistrusted and feared because they were obviously different and strange and, you know, in cahoots with the devil or something. I don't know.
My most sensible explanation for it is that if you're a left-footed player, it's quite a coveted thing because obviously you need left-footed players in your team. So I think left-footed players are often, at a young age, probably less encouraged to work on their weaker foot so that a right-footed player might be more competent with their left foot, say, than a left-footed player is with their right. But at a professional level, I can't imagine that extends in the same way.
No, maybe.
But yeah, this is unfair. Where are all the left-footed right backs? I mean, I don't want it happening on my team. You know, it's classic prejudice. I want it to change, but not Arsenal. Yeah. I don't want to be the guinea pig here.
No, I mean, I think maybe it's because, maybe I'm just guessing or generalizing, and, you know, to any left-footers out there, I mean, no offense, but left-footed players tend to be extremely left-footed. In general.
Yeah, exactly.
Like really, really left-footed. Whereas right-footed players, not, you know, there are some that obviously can't do anything with their left foot, but, you know, you tend to see right-footed players being better with their left foot than left-footed players being as good with their right. So
I think that's true. I think that's true.
There is, I think, a bigger question, though, because obviously Carl Jenkinson was left out of the squad entirely yesterday because... I think he's been playing or struggling to quite get to the level that we would want him to be at after his injury. And, you know, the questions are whether he can ever get to that level. Matthew Debussy was given a chance to stake a claim to play at right back until Hector Bellerin returns. And look, he's going to be sidelined, it looks like. So do we go back to Jenkinson? Do we look for a different solution? Lucy at Lucy Gunnar asks, you know, could Mustafi play at right back as he does for Germany, or should we leave Kostafi, Koscielny and Mustafi as the central partnership?
I mean, I understand Arsene wanting to keep that partnership intact. The problem is that at the moment, when we had Gabriel at right back, you could see a couple of moments where players sort of looked up and could see him in space and thought, I'm actually not going to give him the ball there because I'm not sure, you know, as a centre half, what he's going to do with it on the right wing. Is he going to be able to beat a man? Is he going to play a neat 1-2? And I don't take any satisfaction from saying this, but to an extent, the same thing was happening when Carl Jenkinson was in the team. And actually, it starts to limit your options. You need a right back who people can trust on the ball and trust to give you that width, particularly in this Arsenal team where the wingers drive in field so much, especially Walcott, you know, he ends up in those central positions so frequently, you're really reliant on the fullbacks to provide width. Bellerin does it brilliantly. So I guess we've got to go back cap in hand to Jenkinson. I can't see the Gabriel thing being a long-term solution, can you?
No.
Would you be tempted by Mustafi?
Maybe. I don't know. I've never seen him play there, so I don't quite know. But if it's somewhere he's played relatively regularly, then maybe it would be okay. I don't know. But I would agree with you that the manager would be quite reluctant to break up a central defensive partnership that has yet to lose a game since it's been together. Which isn't to say it's flawless by any means, but, you know, when you've got that kind of a run going, if you want to, you talk about the spine of your team, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there are some partnerships that are really, really important. And obviously, your central defenders are those. Yeah, I mean, he could bring in Gabriel, he could bring in Rob Holding and put Mustafi out there. But I think Jenkinson is obviously the natural fit, and really the only option. Until such time as Hector Bellerin gets back. So, look, you know, maybe he thought the door had been closed for him, and now the door has been opened again. He's looking through the door, seeing Matthew Debussy writhing around in pain, and that's kind of it. So, yeah, I it feels like Jenkinson is the only option, unless he does something completely out of, you know, left field. And I know he played Ainsley Maitland-Niles there during one of the EFL Cup games. Would he view him as perhaps more a potential Bellerin than Carl Jenkinson? But again, you know, he's a guy who's much more of a forward, isn't he? Who's played most of his football as a forward rather than a fullback.
Yeah, and he played in holding midfield in the last game against Reading. But I wonder if Maitland-Niles might get a run there against Southampton. I don't know, but we're now in a position where Jenkinson is the only fit senior right back. So maybe they'll be a bit more, you know, careful with him against Southampton and give someone else a go and a chance to take a claim.
Yeah.
But I think, I expect Jenkinson to come back in for the Premier League matches. I think disrupting, you know, Costafi would worry me slightly, as much as, you know, as much as we've got depth there. It does seem to be working quite well as a partnership. We'll see. Yeah. Something to look at in January, maybe.
Indeed.
When that comes around.
Indeed. All right, here's one from Kevin Johnson Azuara. And he's backed up by Douglas Stanton, who's on Facebook, which is facebook.com/thearseblog. Kevin wants to know, hi guys, any insight as to why Theo was allowed to wear short sleeves yesterday? And Douglas says, what the hell has happened to our sleeve tradition? Yesterday, Theo Walcott played in short sleeves. I know there are more important things to be concerned about, but that's part of our history. And for anyone who doesn't know, the captain before the game decides what shirt sleeves we wear, whether it's long sleeves or short sleeves, and everybody rolls in behind that. But I think it's not the first time this season, if I'm right, that Theo Walcott has done his own thing.
No, you're not. Sorry, you are right. I think it's happened a couple of times. I remember people saying it. Maybe it was at Old Trafford, actually. A few people remarked on it. I don't know. Has he got sponsors tattooed on his forearms? Maybe. Look, it's obviously it doesn't really matter, but it is a nice little bit of tradition, and there are players in the past who've had a preference who've reflected that by either rolling their sleeves up, or in the case of Matthew Flamini, I believe he cut off his sleeves, did he not?
Yeah, Flamini cut off his sleeves, yeah, that's right, and was given a dressing down, I believe, for doing that.
Right. Well, I mean, fair enough, I guess, but at least he sort of adhered, you know, to the tradition in the first place. I'm not desperately upset about it, but I would like to see it continue. I guess it's probably down to the captain, is it? I mean, I guess maybe Koscielny's not as big on it as previous captains have been.
Mm.
Does it irk you at all? Does it bother you?
Yeah. I like those little traditions. You know, I don't think they're hugely important in the great scheme of things. It makes no difference whatsoever as to how the team plays or performs. But I do think that if we've had this long-standing tradition and everybody else is wearing long sleeves, then I think everyone else should wear long sleeves, whether it's Theo Walcott or anyone else. You know, I mean, it's not a fucking huge deal, and you get a little bit carried away with things like this. But I think, as far as I know, it's a tradition that's fairly unique to Arsenal. So it would be nice to see that continue. So, you know, someone have a word. And look, I know some players don't like wearing long sleeves, but just roll them up. Roll them up, man. Roll up your sleeves.
You know, Per Mertesacker's the club captain. I'm sure he can have a word. I saw an incredible stat via Albino on Twitter the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was yesterday, in fact, saying that the last time Arsenal's club captain started a Premier League game was November 2014.
What?
2 years ago. Yeah. Because we had... it was Arteta who started against Manchester United.
That was the last time an Arsenal captain started a league game.
The official club captain, yeah. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Mad. It's pretty mad, eh?
Jesus Christ. Not saying it's a poison chalice of a job, but if you get offered it, guys, just turn it down straight away. You're going to be out injured for ages.
You want to be the vice. The vice is a great position to be.
Absolutely.
Vice always plays.
Yeah. Mertesacker never missed a game when he was vice captain. Minute he becomes captain, ban Jackson, he's out of the side. So do not make anyone like Koscielny the captain on a full-time basis. That's what I'm saying.
That's it, yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's incredible.
Isn't it just? Mm. Yeah. I don't know. We should change our appointment of who's club captain.
Mm.
You know, if Sonogo is club captain now.
He's out anyway. Well, it happened to him. He just gets sucked into another dimension. Something terrible.
I don't know. I've got this question. You alluded to it earlier. Josh Morton says, real question. Real question. This is real talk.
This is
Josh
real. Morton. Okay.
This is real. Okay.
I get a feeling it might be real.
No, it is actually... It is distressingly real.
Okay.
Real question, why are we conceding so many penalties?
I don't know, but I do wonder if there are statistically more penalties being given this season than any other. It feels like there's a lot of penalties in the Premier
That's
League this season. So I do wonder if it's unique to us. But didn't we talk about this, Tottenham have had 10 penalties or something already this season? You know, in all their games?
Really?
That maybe there's just more penalties being given. Like yesterday's, I'm trying to remember the penalties that we've conceded. There was obviously Koscielny against Spurs. There was Monreal yesterday, which I didn't think was a penalty. Koscielny, you could see why that one was given. What were the others?
I can't remember. But
it's four, I think.
Right, okay. It seems plenty, and there have been others as well that, you know, might have been, I think it's fair to say. We have had four for us and four against us.
Right.
According to myfootballfacts.com. Against, that is not the highest tally in the Premier League. Hull City have conceded six penalties.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right.
And four, Liverpool, Leicester and Man City have already had five in their favour.
Right.
So there you go.
So I'm just looking
46
here.
46 given so far in the Premier League in total.
Right.
We obviously have missed two of our four.
Okay, I'm looking here at our penalties this season that we've got. Giroud against PSG, Lucas Perez at Nottingham Forest, Alexis Sanchez against Hull City, Santi Cazorla, Southampton. We've had six penalties so far this season, but obviously four in the Premier League. We've had six overall. So there was Walcott missed against Liverpool. Santi Cazorla scored against Watford, and Santi Cazorla scored against Southampton. Alexis missed one against Hull, if you remember. And then Perez scored in the EFL Cup, and Giroud scored in the Champions League. And penalties conceded. And just bring it up here on this Y-Scout system, which is quite interesting. Just waiting for the stuff to load here. Boom, boom, boom. Callum Wilson, Harry Kane, Jermaine Defoe scored a penalty against us for Sunderland. If you remember, that was 1-1. Yeah. And Robert Snodgrass, penalty for Hull City in the 4-1 win back in September. So, yeah, we've conceded four. Maybe we're just defending clumsily, more clumsily than we have. I don't really have any great theory on it.
Well, in the Premier League, we've won four, conceded four. I can tell you that in the entirety of last season, we won two and conceded one.
Right.
So there is a much higher incidence. In the entire Premier League season last year, there were 91 penalties awarded. And thus far in the Premier League, there have been 46.
Right.
So, but we're not yet halfway through, are we? So I guess there is a slightly increased ratio of penalty award.
Okay.
But there you go.
There you go.
I don't know why we specifically are giving away more. I don't know. We've been a little bit clumsy in some respects, haven't we? I mean, I can think of a few incidents where maybe we've been handsier than we needed to be.
Yes, there was an incident yesterday with Mustafi. Did you see that one? Where he sort of pushed the guy at the back.
Actually.
Yeah, pushed him in the back. Just maybe a bit more last-ditchness to our defending. I don't know. All right, here's a very interesting question. This comes from Shales, who's at Pez_DNA. And he says, is it time to ditch the Alexis up front thing? It's done well, but we're going a bit stale now. Too often we create very little.
Well, it's a no from me. I would definitely keep him there. I think as good as Giroud's been as an individual, I think we're better as a team with Alexis up top. And I think that having Giroud on the bench and being able to change the dynamic of a match by bringing him on is super valuable, really. So, yeah, I mean, I... I don't think it's been quite as effective as it was, a month or two ago. But I think it's still, the best way to go. What about you?
Look, I don't know how you can say it's necessarily gone stale. I think we've played our best football this season when he's been playing there.
I guess maybe they're saying, he played there at Old Trafford. It wasn't particularly effective. Played there against Spurs. Wasn't particularly effective. But
yeah.
I think that's more, that could be levelled at any part of the team, right? I think Alexis up top's been the thing, the fundamental difference for Arsenal this season, that's made us more attractive to watch and more fun to watch. So selfishly, someone who's what's going to watch the team, I want him to stay there. I think we're a better, attractive attacking team with Alexis through the middle.
All right. Have you got one more?
This isn't a question, but I just want to thank El Descarado, who's pointed out that ham on ruffles are available for purchase in North London in a Portuguese deli on the corner of Delancey Street / Albert Street in Camden.
Oh, my God. Well, look,
I'm going to go down there, guys.
You better get there straight away, James, because
we're releasing the podcast.
Yeah, we're releasing the podcast. There's going to be queues out the door in this Portuguese deli. They won't know what's hit them. All these people coming in asking for ham on ruffles. Should go down and buy the entire stock that they have and then set up your own ham on ruffles store outside the Emirates before every game. And just dispense...
That would be sort of
just dispense like a handful of ham on ruffles for a pound. Just have like some...
Very fortune. Hipster of me to set up like a ham on ruffles store.
A ham on ruffles cafe.
Seriously though, guys, if you've never had them, let's say you're, banned from Spain or haven't got a passport, you have to go to this Portuguese deli and get these ham on ruffles. They are God's own crisps.
Yeah, yeah. So was that it? You don't have another question?
I probably do have another question, but I thought that was more important.
All right, okay.
Let me have a look and see.
Yeah, we'll do another couple of quick ones and then we'll get the hell out of here for this week.
Okay, East Lower says, which of the six central midfield pairings Wenger has used so far has been the best?
How the fuck would I know?
Well, I think Cazorla and Coquelin is probably still the best. That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, so I mean, we haven't seen anything else. Like, it's not Coquelin and Ramsey. Elneny and Xhaka, we haven't really seen enough of. Xhaka and anyone, we haven't really seen enough of. Xhaka and Cazorla was quite good away at Watford, but, we haven't seen an awful lot of it. So
never seen again, really.
Yeah, we haven't seen Ramsey and Xhaka. So I really don't know. I mean, the one that we've seen the most is Coquelin and Cazorla, which when it works, works really well, but doesn't always work. So there. That's it, really. That's as much as I can.
Yeah.
As much as I can.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Have you got some more?
I do. Joe Patch, at Boring Joe Patch, says, how exhausting do you think it would be to be one of Alexis's dogs?
Pretty exhausting. I mean, I imagine he's one of the few humans who is, it's the dog who are fed up with him, like chasing him afterwards, being like, can we go home now, please? I guess dogs like walking and running and being out. So at first they must have been like, this is brilliant. We've got the ideal owner. But I think, their stamina will have been slowly worn away.
Mm.
They probably dread him coming home now.
I think they probably
nap. Lead.
They're good at power napping. Oh, here he is. Let's go out in the garden. We're going to play football. I think it would be great. Just fun being one of Alexis's dogs. That'd be fantastic.
Daniel Greenshields asks, which would you rather be, Walcott's newborn baby or one of Sanchez's dogs?
I think being a baby is really shit. When you think about it, it's terrible. You're utterly dependent on two people to feed you, keep you warm. You can't communicate in any significant way. The only thing you can do is cry. And crying can mean all kinds of things. It can mean, I'm scared, I'm cold, I'm hungry, I've just done a big shit, I've wet myself, what's going on, where am I? It was nicer in there. Well,
it can be all those things.
And, you've no way of differentiating between any of those emotions that you're feeling. So basically, being a baby is completely shit. So I wouldn't want to be Theo Walcott's baby. However, being a dog, if you've got the right owner, I would say is fucking awesome. Because, you know, again, your communication skills are relatively limited, but you can let people know what you want much easier than you can if you're a baby. Because if you're a baby, you're just lying on your back. You can't even fucking walk around. The great thing about puppies is, after a couple of weeks, they can run around and play and you know, snuffle around and scrumple you and give you licks and stuff. It's great. So that's the advantage of being a puppy. Obviously, you know, the sad side of that is you die much earlier in general than babies, because babies grow to be old people. If, you know, if they get lucky, if things go well for them, you know. So they've got that. Babies have got the longevity thing. But in the very short term, yeah. I would definitely be a dog. I would be one of Alexis's dogs. I don't care which. Not necessarily fussed. What about you?
difficult to know how to top that, really, as an answer. I think I would also be a dog. I think I like Theo Walcott, but I wouldn't choose him as my dad. That's all I can say, really.
I'm not even going to...
He'd be forever telling me that I was shooting when I was actually crossing and stuff like that. You know, irritating things like that.
All right, final one today comes from Adil Saik. I think I've got that right, or Shaik, who is on Facebook. And apologies if I've just mangled your name there, dude. I'm sorry about that. He says, I have a friend who doesn't like Nutella. I mean, how can someone not like Nutella? Thoughts, gentlemen? To which Mustafa Taffa Akbar has said, replace immediately.
I like that. Mustafa's a robot. I like Nutella. We don't need to do any sort of condiment, you know, spread test with Nutella. I know I like it. I used to, as a child, mix it up with peanut butter and eat it just on its own.
Delicious. I don't really care for it.
Really? Mm. Is it too sweet for you?
I don't know. I mean, I like sweet things. Like, I'm pretty much addicted. I'll come clean on this. I'm pretty much addicted to peanut M&Ms, the yellow ones, in the yellow bag.
Really?
Yeah. Like, if there's a bag there, I'll just eat it. Like, I'll go stop. And I'll go, no. I'm addicted to them.
So do you have to, like, not buy them?
Yeah. And Mrs. Bloggs keeps buying them in these mini packets. And goes, you just have a few, just have one of the mini packets. But I'm going, no, there's loads of mini packets. I'll just eat all the mini packets as well. I do have a bit of a sweet tooth as well. But Nutella is a bit like, I don't know what do I do with it? Like, you know, how do you eat it? Do you, like, just dip your fingers
That's
in
true.
It and eat it? Or I see people have it on pancakes and crepes and things like that.
I've never really, if I'm honest, I've never really applied it correctly. Like, you know, I know it's a spread, but I've only ever really eaten it out of a tub.
Yeah, I mean, are you supposed to have it on toast? What do you spread it on?
I don't know.
Sandwiches?
I'm not sure about that. Chocolate bread, very French, isn't it?
Yeah.
As Dylan Moran would say. But like, I like it, Nutella. I'm just not sure I've necessarily found the correct application for it that's not just spooning it out of the jar.
Yeah, yeah. And there's just something a bit, I don't know, not great about spooning stuff straight out of a jar. You know, a yogurt,
it makes
whatever,
you feel worse. Yeah. you know, I mean, you know, it's a low point, isn't it? It's a low point.
Mm. I've never done it.
Oh, well, you've got that. You're still yet to hit rock bottom, then.
Yeah, maybe if I can get my peanut M&M affliction under control, I'll find a different thing to feel the terrible shame about. But we'll see. All right. Well, look, we've got no advice for you and your friend there, mate. So I guess just accept the fact that some people don't like Nutella. I don't think that's. Yeah. I don't think that's unfortunate. Do you like Bovril?
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I don't know. So that's next week's podcast sorted.
Absolutely. Hang on. I'll just tweet Bovril straight away. Get us a supply. All right. Right. Well, look, we'll leave it there. Thank you, as ever, for listening. We'll have an Arsecast on Friday as we look ahead to the game against West Ham at the weekend. James and I will be here next week to go over all of what happens at, what's the name of the stadium? Not up to what's it called now? What's their stadium called?
The Olympic Stadium, is it? Or, yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that. London Stadium. I don't know.
Right. The London Stadium. So, fingers crossed, Arsenal can keep their winning run going, and we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks as ever.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.